Sorry, that was my fault. Okay, great. Anyway, so this is an official citation from the General Assembly from the state of Connecticut. This is the Environmental Advisory Council meeting, by the way. Welcome, everybody. It says, be it hereby known to all that the Connecticut General Assembly hereby offers its sincerest congratulations to Salvatore E. DiCola in recognition of your work as aldermanic representative to the New Haven Environmental Advisory Council from 2016 to 2021. We commend you for your diligent efforts to establish this council and then guide it from infancy to maturity. Under your quiet but forceful stewardship, the council has addressed air, water, soil, light, and noise pollution issues. We thank you for your years of behind-the-scenes magic to care for people, animals, and plants, and for championing the quest for a cleaner, greener, healthier city, state, country, and world. The entire membership of the Connecticut General Assembly extends its very best wishes on this memorable occasion and expresses the hope for continued success. Anyway, it's got official signatures.
Yeah.
Congratulations. Thank you for everything you do for us. We know how hard it is. I don't know how you do what you do, but you must have a magic wand and we greatly appreciate it.
Well, it's teamwork. And I can't thank everybody because I can't do it alone. I just thank everybody for working together and staying focused. We could differ on some things, but we have to stay focused on the main issue is green and making New Haven greener. So thank you all for your commitment and your time to this for New Haven and for the region.
You're welcome. You're very welcome. And it is we who thank you. And I remember when you took the letter, a group of us drafted into the mayor, to Mayor Harp, and came out with, we're going to meet with her and she's going to make an environmental advisory council. I will never forget how happy we were because we had been working on trying to get this for some time before that. So,
got it.
So yeah.
So thank you. Well, thank you. And in any way I can help going forward, you know, I'm a phone call away and I will do whatever is needed of my capacity as third officer and to help support going forward on things, on our budget season and everything else. So thank you.
We do know. You know what you can do for us? Get us some money for leaf blowers. For electric leaf blowers, if we have to have leaf blowers at all. There you go. Don't worry. We're not going to stop asking.
Okay. That's fine.
All right.
Thank you, Zoe. Thank you.
Okay. Bye.
Bye now.
Okay, so now we will do belated introductions just so we get everybody to say who's here. Oh, and Madeline, my daughter, Madeline Kahn, who's here, she's putting links in the chat to pertinent things we're discussing. This is the link she just put up is to the Environmental Advisory Council webpage on the city website where you can access agendas and meetings to some meeting minutes and things like that, audio recordings, et cetera. Okay, I think I'm just gonna go through and say who's here because I think that'll be easier. It'll be like the party trick I used to do when I used to go around the table when we met in City Hall and try to remember everybody's name and what they did. Okay, so Dawn Henning is our assistant city engineer and she is the amazing logistics and technology expert for the Environmental Advisory Council. And Rafael Ramos is our representative from the Health Department. Alder Steve Winter is our representative from the Board of Alders. Iris Kaminsky is one of our members. Florestine Taylor is another one of our members. And I'm not sure where the other ones are, but oh well. Anyway, the other people at this meeting, Jeannie Dubino, Aaron Good, Florestine, did I say Florestine is one of our members? Did I say that already? I can't remember. Aaron Good, Anstris Farwell, Jeannie Dubino, and are all community members. And Sochi is hopefully going to be an EAC member sometime soon. I hope we're working on that, are we?
Yeah, yes.
Good, because we need your help. And let's see, Sally with the Port Authority, and Alex is the new alder for Ward 1, and that's that. So let's go on with our agenda. And we're going to go fast because the big thing we have this week is a huge hearing on leaf blowers tomorrow evening before the Board of Alders, City Services and Environmental Policy Committee. And we have been waiting since June 2017 for that meeting. So I hope everybody here plans to show up and give testimony if you care at all about leaf blowers. And I hope you were here listening to the people from Quiet Communities when they discuss leaf blowers. And if you need information about leaf blowers, please ask. We have plenty. And I think that's what I will say about that. But I'm going on. We have congratulations to two of our members who are not here, Kathy Fay for her appointment to a State Energy Committee, and Doreen Abubakar on winning the Connecticut Audubon Lifetime Achievement Award. We are trying to meet less frequently because it's a little difficult to put together these meetings on Zoom, but because we're in this very short state legislative session, I thought it might be useful if we kept open the possibility of meeting in April in case there are bills the Environmental Advisory Council wants to advocate for. It would be our last chance because the Connecticut General Assembly session ends on May the 4th. So if we need to discuss how we want to advocate for anything, that's when we could do it. So if any of you who are not official members of the Environmental Advisory Council, but have any interest in any environmental bills they're discussing, whether in the Environment Committee or anything else, just let us know. Madeline put in a link. Oh, no, not yet. Okay. We don't have one of those. Okay. Anyway, you can look on the Connecticut General Assembly website to see what bills they're dealing with. Okay. And I just want to say that I don't know how many of you were here at January's Environmental Advisory Council meeting, but you might remember that Regional Water Authority environment analyst Steve Vickrow said that Yale turned off the municipal water pipe that was watering the golf course. Now, I don't remember if any of you were with us at City Hall in our meeting room when we met with three people from the Regional Water Authority some years ago and told them that Yale was using up to 200,000 gallons of city water every day to water the golf course. But they claimed there was no golf course that was using more than 40,000 gallons of water a day. And they must have done research and decided that that wasn't true because somehow we had the facts. Yale had printed the facts and publicized the facts saying that 200,000 gallons was even less than they had used before. Anyway, the pipe is turned off, so New Haveners are no longer subsidizing Yale's use of water to irrigate their golf course and contaminate the water because they also put pesticides on the golf course. And then, of course, the water runs down the hill and has impacted the whole neighborhood with sinkholes in the streets and are having to have the sewers replaced, both sanitary and storm, and people having to use sump pumps in their basements and having sinkholes in their yards and houses being compromised and such. So anyway, I think I forgot to introduce Chris Ozick, who is here also. Anyway, I just want, hi, Chris, sorry about that. I did not mean to leave you out. Anyway, so you should all be very proud of the fact that we are making a difference and we should keep making a difference. And I think our work it speaks for itself. So anyway, we're having this big leaf blower hearing tomorrow at 6:00 at CSEP. And if Madeline is here, Oh, there it is. She already put the notice in the chat box. So if any of you don't have the information, you can find it. It was noticed in the New Haven Independent. And if you can reach I'm sure you can reach the information through the city website. And if you can't find it any other way, you can ask me. And let's see. I know I sent out the New Haven Greenhouse Gas Inventory presentation, which Dawn's intern did, or the links to them, and the PURA 101 webinar. Those were very interesting. Thank you, Steve, for putting the Zoom link to register. The room will be open 15 minutes before the hearing starts, well, before the meeting starts. So anyway, you should know that. Anyway, so if anybody hasn't had a chance to look at Dawn's intern's greenhouse gas inventory presentation, it was quite fascinating. And even though we probably need more greenhouse gas inventories in future years to compare it to, it's a good thing to have as a benchmark. And thank you, Dawn, for supervising that and helping with that. Okay, and the PURA 101 webinar was a very interesting explanation for how the Public Utilities Regulation Authority works. And if you don't know what that is, or you don't know how it works, this was the head of PURA explaining to all of us how it works and showing us how to access information about what they're doing. They have a docket with cases on it. And so if anyone is interested in specific public utilities, this is a way you can access some of that information. Let me see. Committee reports. So the noise committee, which is dealing with the leaf blower issue, can report that Quiet Communities, the nationwide entity that's working on noise reduction, is holding a forum March 15th from 12 to 2 about reducing noise. And might be interesting. If you're interested in that kind of stuff, please go and report back. Some of us went to their last forum, and I think we learned a lot, and there were people from all over the country at the forum. And I don't know the exact subject of this is. They talked about leaf blowers at the last forum, but if helicopters are mentioned, we do have a helicopter issue. So hello, Kathy. It would be good for us to find out any information about noise and helicopters from them. Let's see. Lawn chemicals. There are three pesticide bills in the Connecticut General Assembly Environment Committee, one to ban chlorpyrifos from golf courses, one to ban neonicotinoids for use on green spaces, but keep them still okay for pets, and another one about rodenticides. The Turf Committee, after Rams wide receiver Odell Beckham Jr. got his leg caught in the artificial turf during the Super Bowl, NFL players came out against artificial turf. Yes, Madeline just put the link to the report from CBS about that issue. So yes, I see Kathy is holding a thumbs up about that. Yes, thank you, Kathy. I realize Kristen Gordon isn't here either. Okay, let's see. Air. So Raphael, I know I sent you something about wood smoke issues, and I hope New Haven is dealing with people who are using wood fires to do anything except cook, which is not permitted, I believe.
Yeah, so I have a meeting coming up with the fire marshal, which is totally under their jurisdiction, the use of those types of things in homes. So my meeting is for next week, and I will report on the next meeting.
Okay. Thank you very much. because I don't, especially during the pandemic, a lot of people got fire pits, and I don't think they understand what they're doing to themselves and everybody else by hanging around those and burning wood just to do it.
Well, let me mention that in my other capacity as code enforcement, we used to talk to people because we don't want people thinking, you know, you smell fire and you're thinking, oh, it's just my neighbor with a pit in the backyard, particularly when a house, some houses are 2 or 3 feet away from each other, right? So, but they have common backyards. And so it's always been an issue with people burning those things in the backyards and then everyone thinking, well, it's just smoke, guy next door, but it could be somebody's house.
Yeah.
That's an issue. So we'll be discussing that with the fire marshal.
Thank you very much. We appreciate that. Because I think people really don't know enough about what wood smoke does to the environment, especially unnecessary wood smoke. And I understand during the pandemic, everything was pretty topsy-turvy, but we still have to be cognizant of what we are doing to ourselves and the planet. As you see, Madeline put something about wood smoke in the chat. Let's see, what are we up to? Water. Iris, oh, are you still there? Well, Iris, I think had to go pick someone up. But if she's here, and when she gets there,
I'll talk later, okay?
Okay, that's fine. You can talk later. Sorry. So okay. I do want to mention that there is a Mill River Watershed meeting next Tuesday, which is March 8th. And the links are in the chat. The last meeting was very interesting because apparently they're going to renovate the Eli Whitney Watershed Dam, and a whole group of people from the neighborhood where it's located sort of came to the meeting and hijacked it and said, you better talk to the neighbors first because there will be noise and construction and we want to be consulted. And I thought that was pretty fascinating that those people want to be consulted. And some of us who live in neighborhoods where big entities are doing huge construction projects don't get consulted about things, and it's very distressing to us. So, yeah. Anyway, let's see. For materials management, I can report that there's an extended producer responsibility for packaging bill in the Connecticut General Assembly Environment Committee. And I think they were working on the language, but I hope, oh, there it is. Madeline put the link in the chat so you can look it up. And let's see. The only other thing I have is a report on parks. Kristen and I attended two meetings. One was a public meeting about the Kimberly Field Trail, which URI had asked the Environmental Advisory Council to advocate, to write a letter in support of a grant for, so we did. And it turns out that they didn't really have a plan for the money. They asked for the money first, and then they got a lot of money from different sources. And then they held a Zoom community meeting to discuss the plan. And I think Kathy, before, as we were drafting this letter, Kathy said, do we really do things like that? And I said, well, we have supported grants in the past, but I think the Environmental Advisory Council might want to reconsider advocating for grants without knowing very, very, very specific information about them, because it seemed like we thought this money was going to improve, to make and improve a trail at Kimberly Field. And it was unclear. I only attended part of that meeting because I had to go to another meeting, but both Kristen and I were a little bit disturbed by the fact that the Environmental Advisory Council had advocated for something we obviously didn't know enough about. So Kathy, good point you made about not advocating for things before we, yeah, Chris, I see you have your hand raised.
All right, so I just got off another meeting with the Kimberly Field folks. So the grant that we were asking for support was from the DEP, and that's for a trail that is planned. The broader improvements, the city has over $100,000 that they're also making other improvements to the site. And the whole process of planning all those pieces is what that meeting was about. But if we get the money from DEP, so we've already gotten some of the money from Two for the Trails, which is a non-alcoholic beer company. We've gotten private donations, and we're also getting money. We're trying to get money from DEP to make a full loop trail. But there's lots of other improvements that need to be done at the site and programming. And that's what that broader meeting was about.
Got it. Okay. Because it looked like the money from that grant was listed among the other sort of money sources, as far as I could tell.
There's lots of different parts to it. And all we were asking for was support for the walking trail, which is a loop that would go around the park itself. But there's a serious amount of work that needs doing over there. And so, you know, we can only do our pieces.
Okay.
So if DEP gives us the money, we will do it just like we've done it at other parks in New Haven. You know, such as East Rock and all around Beaver Ponds. So, and that's a traditional money source that we use to do trail improvement projects.
Okay. Thank you for clearing that up. I guess. No,
Kristen, and we appreciate your support. Thank you.
You're welcome. Kristen and I were just a little bit disconcerted when people started talking about a homeless encampment on that field and about, you know, kids who were felt unsafe walking across the field to go to and from school. And we were out of our depth, obviously.
That's why we're doing this work, because it is long needed and the right thing to do.
Okay. Well, then we are happy to help you. Thank you. And next time we'll just ask even more questions before we sign off on a letter so that we are assured. Yeah. I mean, we know you do good work. We're not worried about that. We just, I don't know. Sometimes the Environmental Advisory Council doesn't want to get conned into supporting things without being sure what it is exactly that we're supporting.
Understood.
So, yeah. And the other parks issue that I think Kristen and I both went to another meeting about the Kensington playground. And that is a whole issue that seems to be turning into the low-income housing entity that owns the property. They're building another playground on Garden and Chapel Street on a corner. And they showed a plan for it at this meeting, and the plan seemed to have fewer trees in it than exist on that site now. And it had a playing surface that was primary colors. So I'm not sure whether it was going to be made out of some kind of plastic. I'm a little worried about that. And I'm a little worried that they're going to try to chop down some or all of 16 trees on that site. And I'm wondering if the Environmental Advisory Council should write a letter to the entity that owns that property and ask them not to do that as part of this making of a playground. And I'm wondering what you think of that, Floristine and Kathy and Iris and anybody else who's here.
Well, I think it's our duty to advocate for the trees to not be cut.
Okay. Well, I'm okay if they improve it. I'm okay if they put a playground there and make the the surface out of wood chips. I think, though, that putting plastic might be detrimental to the health of the children, and I hope they won't chop down any trees. I do not know for a fact how healthy or old the trees are, but I've asked somebody to find out. Florestine, what is your take on this?
Yeah, I agree with what Kathy said about the trees not being cut down and the playground in general. I mean, what's the surface of the playground and what all is going to contain? If they're going to replace one playground with another playground, which is more in a natural setting, and create something artificial, you know, you can't really, that's not healthy for the kids with all this, whatever these materials are being made of in this playground, you know, especially you got some natural environments in there and then you're going to put all this other artificial stuff in there.
Right.
I don't know that much about it, so I can't really make a thorough comment.
Okay, well,
I do know a lot about TCB, Community Builders, because I work for them at 100 Howell Street. So I know a lot about TCB. So if you want me to, I can follow up more on that.
Great. Yes, because that, yes. So the thing is, at the moment, it's basically an empty lot with 16 trees on it. And I just want to make sure they're not going to chop the trees down. And I want to make sure that the kids are going to have a healthy place to play. And, you know, there's no playground there right now. It's just kind of a lot that's hanging out. I'm glad they want to make it. I'm glad they want to upgrade it and put picnic tables and things and make it a lovely place to be. That's great. But yes, Florestine, if you don't mind.
Where is that exactly located again? I forgot. I'm sorry.
On Chapel Street.
And
at
what?
The corner of Garden.
Garden. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
All yeah. Right. All right, we will follow up on that.
Yeah, I'll follow up on that. That's interesting. Well, it's more than interesting.
Yes.
Hazardous, you know.
Anstris writes, the Garden Street Park will remain a private park only for residents of the Community Builders property. It will not serve the whole Dwight neighborhood. Okay, that's interesting. But no matter who it serves or what it does, it would be very nice if it was as natural and preserving as possible if there is nature to be preserved. So yeah. We'll keep that in mind. Okay.
Follow up on that.
Thanks. So I had a message from Jeff Layden, who owns Layden Industries at 69 Wheeler Street. And he always updates me because he knows that we are big into knowing what's going on down there on Wheeler Street. And he wrote me that DEEP is issuing a new permit for their facility at 69 Wheeler Street. They operate a small yard that warehouses soil that is displaced during the course of construction. They bring it there, test it to ensure it is clean, then bring it back to the construction site once they're ready to backfill the holes. This facility has been in operation for many decades and permitted by DEEP for the last 3 years, now with no changes and no known issues. Over a year ago, DEEP said they are eliminating the permit we held called the General Permit for Soil Staging and replacing it with a permit that now calls the facility a transfer station. We applied for this new permit as part of our renewal process of the General Permit. As I read this paperwork that I just received today, I realize that the public may think something new is going to be happening here, which is not the case. The existing operation is continuing as is, and DEEP changed the name of the permit internally, not because they applied for something different. So in case anybody's worried about that, that's what they do. And if you go to Wheeler Street, you see this big, you pass this big, like huge cement blocked in area next to Onofrio's Foods, and that's where they are. And so that's what's happening. They're not allowed to reuse the soil they dig up from problem sites until they check on it. Okay. So anyway, just be aware of that. Let's see. Now we don't have very much more here, but anyway, English Station, you'll be happy to know that there is a remediation progress update posted on the UI website, and it was posted on December 31st. I know it's a very long link, but there it is in the chat. If you type in English Station UI or vice versa, you can get to it. And if you go to this link, you can scroll down and see the December 31, 2021 update. So Anybody who can understand that information that's posted there? Good. I'm so glad. I asked for an update and we got an update, and I'm thrilled that we got one for all those of you like Aaron and Anstris and maybe Steve and Chris who understand that, and maybe even Sally. Go for it. Look it up. And just if there's any problem that you see, let us know if the Environmental Advisory Council should do something. Let's see. So the Wheeler Street Transfer Station is in the middle of requesting a renewal for their city permit for their special, it's a special permit they have to operate. And the City Plan Commission hired a consultant to review the 586 page application. So if the consultant is done before the March City Plan Commission meeting, there will be a hearing about it at that meeting. And if not, it will be whenever the consultant's done. So what can I say about the Wheeler Street Transfer Station except that I wish the city could find somewhere else to put this operation far from water and far from homes, because it's really too close to the residents who live right there. And I did ask how we could submit complaints and was told that they should be submitted to DEEP, to Robert Eisner, and that the complaints that were already submitted by a testimony at the DEEP hearing do not count. We need new ones. So they need to be submitted as they happen. So if the light's shining in your eyes at 3 a.m, I guess you have to get up and take a picture and send an email to DEEP, which I think is a little bit unreasonable to ask. I think DEEP should be responsible for monitoring the noise, the lights, the traffic, et cetera, but that's the way it goes. They say the burden is on the residents to tell them. So anybody have any comment about that?
I've been pressing on with some people at DEEP and also with the city about the rat issue and the constant scavenging by seagulls. So you can drive by any day of the week, including today, and see all the seagulls out there. I counted about 100 seagulls today. They're not going after dry waste.
No, they're not.
They tell you the story. And there are days where there are no seagulls, or actually weeks where there's no seagulls. So that tells me kind of what the activity is happening at that site.
Okay, thanks. I happened to drive there today because I was coming home from Sal's house, and I noticed about 4 trucks coming and going in the space of about 2 minutes. I also noticed a sign at the entrance that said environmental work is going on at the site. And there was the name of a man and a company and a phone number. If anybody cares about that, I can give it to you if you want to call and see what kind of environmental cleanup is going on there. I don't know if the city already knows about this. I assume somebody knows about it if environmental cleanup is going on. Anyone have any more information than I do?
Nope, but we did get a heads up from Chris a couple of weeks ago about the seagulls, and we sent out a sanitarium to walk the property with one of the owners over at 19 Wheeler. And came back saying that found the property to be clean and couldn't pinpoint the issue with the seagulls and or rodents. However, Chris mentioned today that the seagulls are out, so we're going to go out tomorrow again and take a look and see if in fact it's because of the wet.
Thank you. Sort of thank you very much.
Okay. And I got a direct mandate from my boss today to go back out there tomorrow and take a look and see what's going on.
Fantastic. Well, please thank Director Bond for us, and thank you very much. We know that it's not fun for you to have to keep going there, but we appreciate it. And we owe you a pair of nose clips.
Well, no, it's a health department. What we do is we put Vicks.
Okay. All right. Okay. So I just have, thank you. I have a few more things. My daughter just turned on the light because she saw it was getting dark behind me. Bird safe buildings. We are still waiting for the city plan department to come up with ordinance revisions for that. I don't know if anybody here knows about that, since no one from the city plan commission, I mean, for the city plan department is here.
I do know that Jamie Stein, who was kind of leading that effort in city plan, became the town planner of Guilford.
And so yes.
No longer with city plan.
Yes. Okay. Well,
director. Probably has a lot on her plate.
Yes. But somebody here still has to be working at the city plan department, for which we are also waiting for the coastal property evaluation and plan that we and the Urban Design League asked a while ago. And we were told by Aisha Woods that she was going to give us a report later this spring. I guess that's not going to happen anymore because there's a new city plan director. And I don't know where the city is on that project. But so those are things. I hope somebody can tell us about these things at some point. We'll give some people a month or so to get up to speed and then bring up these two issues again. Okay, so there is a light pollution issue from a roof garden at 18 High Street, which is, it has a 50-foot by 1-foot strip light, and our very nice friend, Eugene Connolly, who I think lives in Florestine's building, is bothered by this light, which is on late at night, and he spoke to the manager of the building, who refused to turn the light off, even when people are not using it, and even when it's late at night. So there are city ordinances about light trespass and pollution, and it is disturbing to people who can't sleep when this light is shining in their eyes. And I realize it's, once they put this roof garden up there, it might be a security risk to have it there with no light, especially if people can access it and they don't want anyone staying up there all night and stuff like that. But I think the city needs to call them on this. And I emailed Nate Hoagland at Zoning, with whom I worked on the updates of these light ordinance language issues, and I haven't heard back from him, but I just emailed him today, and I wonder if you know anything about it, Dawn or Raphael. Okay, well, if you're taking complaints about light, this is it, 18 High Street, and I can give you the number of the building manager if you need it. Florestine, can you see this light from your apartment? You're muted. You're still muted. You're muted.
Yeah, I live on the fifth floor and Jean lives on the 16th floor, which has one of the most beautiful views. But obviously that now that view has become a distraction. And so, but I'll talk to Jean. I know him very well.
Okay. But
thanks. See if we can do more about that, because you know, I can't even imagine when we had a fire in the building. They temporarily put me into an apartment on the 16th floor, and I had a view that beat all views. And but like I said, you know, if you're trying to sleep at night and that light is coming in, and I know, and G was right down the hall from where I was located, and so it's you know, that's bad. It's bad.
Yeah. Thank you, Florestine.
No explanation. That's not, it's unfair, you know.
He pays
good rent here, has a beautiful apartment, and he doesn't deserve that. No neighbors up there deserve that. But it's interesting, no one else has complained yet. So I'm going to touch base with Jean about that. See
okay.
If anyone else in the building has got any complaints.
Okay. But Raphael, I'm wondering, does the health department deal with late complaints or not?
My experience when I was a zoning enforcement officer, that light is a zoning issue.
Okay, then hopefully Nate will get back to me. I see Kathy and Jeannie raise their hands. Go ahead, Kathy.
There are state laws around light pollution. The law requires that new outdoor night lighting, with certain exceptions, be shielded below horizon level or shut off after 11 p.m. And then there's a report that also summarizes the various Connecticut laws that address light pollution. Should I put that in the chat?
Sure. And then perhaps if we can't get anything out of the zoning people, the Environmental Advisory Council will have to write to the building manager. But I hope the city will deal with it, since those are laws that people are not following. Jeannie?
Oh, no, I'm just agreeing. But you know how, Laura, you and I live on a field where we see some pretty bright lights. Do you think that those would violate the ordinance? I mean, they are.
No, there is an exception for sports like things. Sorry.
Oh, that's unfortunate. Okay, yep. Thank you.
You're welcome. Okay, so let's see. City and state initiatives. So, this city is being asked to ban plastic bags up to 4 millimeters, whatever it is, in thickness, to augment the state law, which is a ban on those really thin plastic bags. And that is Alder Steve Winter's baby. Tell us about it, Steve.
Well, we had a presentation from Lewis Birch before the full board of alders at our public caucus, which is a meeting we have before our board meeting, where we can ask questions of city staff, and occasionally members of the public will give us introductions to issues. So I'm in touch with a couple other members of the board, and we're going to try to use the language that Norwalk and Stamford have. So try to draft something and run it by other members of the board and see if we can get it in the legislative pipeline.
Great. If we can help you, we'll be happy to do it. Okay?
Okay. Yeah, I think I know Kevin McCarthy has offered drafting, kind of legislative drafting. Maybe I'll follow up with him.
Great.
About that.
He had an emergency at one of his volunteer gigs, so he couldn't make it tonight, but I'm sure he will be happy to help you, because yes, he is the drafting expert on the environmental, or one of them. He's on the Environmental Advisory Council. Anyway, thank you, Steve. So let's see. Some of us got an email from Cheryl Baldwin, who's the deep recycling specialist, and she happens to be a New Haven resident. And she wrote that New Haven could see $150,000 per year, according to revenue projections for 2021. No, for 2021, based on 2020 sales of mini liquor bottles. Madeline put the link to the projections in the chat. The first payment is expected next month. This is for sales on mini liquor bottles, for the 5-cent bottle deposit, I think. So I hope the city of New Haven will use this money to do only sustainability things, such as replace some of its outdated, outmoded lawn and garden care equipment with things that are quieter and more efficient, because that would make sense. And perhaps even to fund the climate mobilization emergency task force, I probably got that wrong, request for a sustainability person in the city. And I think, you know, Pat Dillon, mine and Jeannie's and Iris's state rep and Madeline's, keeps asking about grant money. So if I think New Haven, I don't know. I mean, Dawn, you're pretty great at writing grants and getting making sure New Haven gets the money first. But I hope we are not missing out on money because we don't have somebody dedicated to asking for it. Any comment, Dawn?
Are we missing money? I mean, that's hard to say. There's a lot of grants out there. I think it's what we're, you know, in the engineering department, I'm focused on grants that are, you know, would be utilized by the engineering department. I can't speak by, you know, I'm not writing grants for things that would be used by Parks and Public Works, for example, necessarily, right? So I can't speak kind of beyond that.
Okay, which is why it might be useful.
And then we partner a lot with our nonprofit partners and other people that come to us and want to do work in New Haven or with us on grants as well.
Okay, thanks. But that's why it might be useful if we had the money to have someone who was working on sustainability efforts citywide.
We did have an on-call climate like consultant that was working with us, but then she got a job somewhere else, and so we don't have her right now. And she was working on looking at turning the city fleet to electric vehicles. She was helping with looking into that, and she did help write a grant for getting an electric garbage truck. So if there is precedent for that.
I knew the garbage truck sounded quieter. Did they just start last month?
I don't think we got it yet.
Oh, really? Are you sure?
I don't think so.
I'm
pretty sure. We're getting really fast. I don't think we got it yet.
Okay. Well, maybe I just have been sleeping through it more. Okay. Anstris put in the chat, it was great when the city had a sustainability director. Christine Tang did a wonderful job. Was she the consultant? No.
No, that was back when the city had a sustainability director office, maybe, or I think it might.
Got it.
It was before my time.
Got it. Kathy just put something in the chat. What did you put in the chat?
That's the light pollution. That's the summary of the light pollution laws. And so that little thing that I read was from there.
Great. Okay. Thank you. So the other thing, the other city and state sustainability initiative I will mention to everybody, and you can all read it for yourself, is Governor Lamont's Executive Order 23-21-3 on climate. And Madeline put it in the chat. So if you haven't read it, feel free. What I don't understand is why DEEP and the governor didn't answer when we asked about leaf blowers when they're busy writing all these things. Why don't they actually give us some concrete something? Anyway, we're going to work on that tomorrow night. All right. So everybody, please keep track of whatever environment bills in the Connecticut General Assembly you think the Environmental Advisory Council could advocate for. The legislative session ends May 4th, and Madeline put the link to the calendar in the chat, and I'm counting on everybody to keep track of this stuff because it's all going to different committees. Kathy's watching energy bills that are in two different committees already, and things, you know, there's just no telling where things are going, and it's such a short session that if we want to advocate for something, we're going to have to do it fast. Okay, I only have two other things, and then anybody else who has something can bring it up. I plan to draft a letter to Congresswoman DeLauro asking for her to co-sponsor the Quiet Communities Bill in Congress, which has been co-sponsored by a lot of New York legislators. And I'm just curious, because I keep reading about more and more new development in New Haven, what the Environmental Advisory Council and the rest of you think of the Environmental Advisory Council drafting sustainability lawn and garden care suggestions or requirements for all these new buildings, such as only pave over necessary space, plant native species, use rainwater for irrigation, use the least polluting equipment to care for them as possible, and such like that. Compost the trimmings and the leaves instead of putting them in a landfill. Anybody have any comments about that?
Get the regulation from a German town.
Get the regulation from a German town?
Yeah, like Stuttgart or any of the other great German towns. They are the leaders in environment and sustainability and being conscientious, and it all works.
Great. Okay. Thank you.
I'm not doing it.
No, I know.
It's a great place to look for where it works and how it can be done.
Okay. Jeannie?
I think that's a really good idea, Laura. If you think about how buildings are supposed to be greener, also address the land around them and the pavement. So absolutely, that goes hand in hand. So I completely support that. I can't do it, but I think it's a really good idea. So thank you.
Well, I haven't done it yet, but I'm willing to try, and I'm willing to go look, do some research after tomorrow. Yes, Kathy?
I'm wondering, I know we have some MS4 regulations, those are the stormwater regulations that do apply already to this new construction, but I don't really know exactly what they say. But if we do have some things that are already, you know, already written, we should also reference those things.
Yes.
I can speak to that. So I was going to say, so a couple of the things that affect the site include Section 60 of the zoning ordinance, the stormwater management plan. So that does require people to infiltrate 1 inch of runoff on their site. So we do at least get them to keep water on their site and not have it contribute to our issues in the storm sewer. And there's other things in Section 60, but that's kind of the bigger one. We do want to edit that to encourage more green. A lot of times they're just putting infiltrators underneath parking lots or underneath their buildings, and to kind of encourage the you know, rain garden type installations. Sometimes you don't have the space, but and then also the reflective heat ordinance. We are working on a revision. The way it's written now really doesn't encourage people to reduce their pavement on site. It doesn't really give credit for the green space on their site, which we think is a downfall of the way it is currently written. It kind of makes sure that your low, you know, reflective pavements like asphalt are shaded or, you know, coated with something that's more reflective, but it doesn't really give you credit if you were to actually turn that to landscape, you know, to grass or plants, you know. So we want to, we are working on a revision to that because we recognize that it's, you know, it has a goal that it's not really achieving the way it's written. So
great.
That's not everything that you mentioned, but that's the overlap that I see with the current.
Okay. So you're writing that with city plan or something?
Yeah, it would be an effort out of city plan. We worked with a Yale class that did a really good job, at least getting us most of the way there. And we just have to, now with the, we're hopeful with the new director, we could work together on kind of getting that across the finish line.
Great. Okay, well, if I give you a list of other...
It can include all of the things. It's definitely just focused on the urban heat island portion. So that's what I'm saying. These are just the areas that overlap. I think that, you know, some of these other, you know, not using pesticides, encouraging searching planting, kind of management stuff definitely could still be part of a guidance or whatever else you want to do. I just wanted to point out where, at least in the zoning ordinance, we already have.
Got it.
Some of those being addressed.
Got it. Thank you. Very useful. Thanks, Dawn. I think Kristen has just joined us. Hi, Kristen. Is that who the K is? Yeah, Kristen. Hi. We're just about...
Yep, sorry I'm late.
It's okay. Welcome. We were talking about the parks issues before, and we heard from Chris Ozick that the Kimberly Field Trail actually was planned by the Urban Renewal Initiative, and that
right.
That all the other parts of the Kimberly Park project were not yet planned, and that was what that community meeting was about, but that URI has it under control that the money we advocated for will go to the trail. So
okay, cool. Yep, that makes sense. That was my understanding. Sounds great. Thank you.
You're welcome. And we're also, Florestine is going to look into the planned playground for the corner of Chapel and Garden Streets to hope that she can convince TC, whatever they are,
yeah,
not to chop down any trees and not to use artificial surface on the playground. So that will be good.
And great, if
we
have to
write a letter, we will do that. Anyway, that's all I have. Don't everybody please come to the leaf blower public hearing tomorrow. We need if you can't come, if you just send testimony saying that you support limits on leaf blowers and that you want the noise ordinance enforced, that's good too. But if you can show up at the hearing and testify for 3 minutes or less, that's good. If you want to just show up and hear everything that's going on, that's fine. But, you know, advocacy out loud is always good. Kathy, you have your hand raised.
Yeah, it's about the Quiet Communities letter that you're writing to Rosa DeLauro. Is that something you're writing yourself, or are you drafting that on behalf of us?
Yes, on behalf of the EAC, if that's okay with you. I will share it with you because you know, we sent a letter to EPA Director Michael Regan, and which was what Jamie Banks at Quiet Communities asked us to do. But one of her colleagues who came to talk to us asked us to write a letter to Rosa DeLauro, to our congresswoman. So we will do that too. So anyway. Let's hope we can get something started.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you.
I have something I'd like to share.
Yes.
So the governor's in town tomorrow. He will be in Fairhaven at 11:30. He's here to introduce his bill 5044, House Bill 5044, and that's reducing lead poisoning. And very quickly, there's two parts to the bill, two take homes. One is that the bill proposes to appropriate $70 million for lead abatement and other remediations of homes such as mold, asbestos, et cetera. And then the second part of the bill is reducing the threshold where health departments across the state take action when a child has an elevated blood lead level. Now, they're going to moderate theirs after New Haven, but they will not be where New Haven is until 2025. So New Haven right now, if a child has I don't know what the background noise is, but if a child has a blood lead level of 5 or greater, a child under 6, 5 or greater, it's an action threshold for us. In the rest of the state, it's not. It's numbers like 10, 15, and 20. So New Haven is way ahead of the other cities and municipalities in terms of action levels for a child with elevated blood lead levels. So the governor will be in here tomorrow at 11:30 at 235 Ferry Street, which is the Catholic Charities Childhood Development Center, which is also a daycare.
Okay.
Tomorrow.
Thank you. So just for information's sake, the Environmental Advisory Council doesn't really deal with health issues in buildings, mostly like lead poisoning, because that's more of a specific health thing. We sort of deal with air, water, noise, light, the sort of environmental things that, because we know there's a health commission that deals with the lead poisoning.
It was just information.
I know, and we appreciate that,
it is a bill, and right. It is environmental justice.
You're right. And you know what? Doreen Abubakar, one of our members, is very concerned about lead poisoning. So she will be very interested to know this. And we are thrilled the governor is coming here to talk about it because, yeah, it's very important. Yes, Chris?
So lead is in our soils.
Yeah, we know.
And so that's why this is also important, because people garden and vegetables all over the place and they track it in their homes. So it is a broad environmental issue.
Yes. Thank you. Okay, but that's what the governor's bills, I guess, are about lead poisoning from buildings. Is that correct?
Covers it all. It should. Okay. All the new stuff covers, they want the soils treated too.
Yeah, it's all inclusive. It's called a comprehensive.
Yeah.
Got it. Oh, really?
Water, soil. Oh, I'm sorry. And the second part of the bill is the removal of lead pipes in the water system. Money for that as well.
Great. So and bill, stress. Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
So it's House Bill 5045.
Okay. I think maybe Madeline put the address where Governor Lamont is going to be in the chat. And I think she put something. A link to the bill, and Anstris, you have your hand raised.
Yeah, I just want to second what you've seen from Aaron, that the lead poisoning really is a broad environmental concern. And the one question I had for Mr. Ramos was, how much of the $70 million might come to New Haven? And is this an amount of money that might get made a traditional part of the state budget?
I would not be able to tell you how much of that will be allocated to New Haven, but New Haven is one of the sort of big cities with 70. So the indicators are any house bill prior to 1978 is suspected to have lead somewhere in the house. That's the year lead was banned from domestic use. So it's safe to say that 70% of all the properties in New Haven were built prior to 1978. And in our five, what we call our five opportunity zones, which is the Hill, Dixwell, New Haven, Fairhaven, and parts of Fairhaven Heights, the properties are marginal. Therefore, we have lots of sort of concerns about lead, and I think that the allocations will be appropriated according to your need. So but I don't know how much of that will come to New Haven, but $70 million is a good piece, and it can help with what we already have. We have $5.6 million to deal with lead abatement right now. This is without considering what we might get from the state.
Do you have any idea if there was a magic wand and you could get all the money you needed for lead pipes and lead paint abatement? How much do you need?
I have no idea.
Yeah.
So that would be, but we have a goal right now. We have 5.6 million and our goal is to try in the next 2 to 3 years do 200 units.
Yeah. It could be interesting to see if you could extrapolate from buildings that have been remediated and then come up with an estimate of how many buildings there are even that would need remediation, particularly in the opportunity zones, and come up with a thing. I'm sure it's massive and it's going to need to be chipped away at slowly, but it would give a sense of how ubiquitous this is, that it is in fact a widespread environmental problem. So thanks a lot. This is really good news.
I put a link in the chat to an older New Haven Independent article that said the costs range from 70 million to 700 million, depending on whether you're looking at all lead apartments or just those with children under six as inhabitants. And somehow the report settled on the number of $91 million. But it's definitely in the, like, you know, 100 million or more range, it looks like.
Thank you. Okay, so Aaron, do you want to talk about this a little as well? I see you put in the chat that you think lead exposure is very relevant and heavy exposure to lead in New Haven should be considered as part of the cumulative impact for siting of polluting facilities. Well, anyway.
No, that's it, Laura. I wanted to thank Raphael for being here and letting us know. And I did hear the governor talk about this in his address, opening day address at the legislature. This was, you know, one of the priorities that he announced to the General Assembly when they opened their session. And I thought it was very compelling. So
thank you. Thank you. And just in case, just so you all know, I am extremely concerned about lead poisoning. It's not that I'm not concerned. In fact, I had to file a complaint when my daughter was a toddler with the Massachusetts Commission Against Discrimination because some lady wouldn't rent us a house because she was worried our kid would get lead poisoning. So I am very cognizant of this issue and have been now for 20 years. And yeah, I do care about it. I do like to focus the Environmental Advisory Council on issues that we can have a specific impact on. And I think the lead issue has a lot of people working on it. I'm happy to report, and I hope that will continue. And I'm glad we're getting money to try and alleviate the problem. And yeah, that's that. Steve, do you want to say something else?
Oh, I was just gonna chime in on the leaf blower hearing tomorrow and encourage folks who can make it to testify to come or to email public testimony at newhavenct.gov. And I know Laura had mentioned how it relates to the noise ordinance, but I think anything related to the impacts of leaf blowers, even though we can't regulate air quality, we know that the air quality issues and respiratory health problems that these leaf blowers cause. So it's all fair game as it relates to your public testimony.
Yes, and you know leaf blowers, they blow the lead in the soil around too. So we can tie this all in. And whoever's dog that is that's barking should come and testify because the dog pets are really exposed even more to the dust from leaf blowers and from, you know, their hearing is affected too. We don't even know how the noise from leaf blowers sounds to dogs. It could sound much louder than it does to us. I'm not an animal research scientist, but so we should all, well, we will find out tomorrow how things go. And I know CSEP is counting on us to do a good job of presenting all the facts and hearing all perspectives, which we will do. So does anybody have anything else to report or anything else to ask? Kathy.
Just really briefly, a lot of the energy related bills are scattered in committees that aren't energy and technology. So the home energy labeling bills were taken up in the housing committee and for renters. It's split now. So renters was taken up in the housing committee, and at point of sale, home energy labeling was taken up in the real estate and insurance committee. Insurance and real estate committee. So I'm keeping an eye on those, and I'll give you updates on the energy bills as they, the language in some of them is evolving. But both of those were governor's bills.
Thank you, Kathy. And I'm glad that you're such an expert that you can keep track of the whack-a-mole kind of game they're playing with the Bills, because we're counting on you. And before you came in, I'm sorry you were stuck in the waiting room. We congratulated you on your appointment to the State Energy Committee, and we will look forward to hearing about your progress in getting energy justice for everybody. And
thank you. The big thing that's happening right now is, I'll tell you in two sentences, the process for DEEP to draft the comprehensive energy strategy is starting to begin, and that that process is that strategy is written every 4 years. So there's two other main things that go into that. The conservation and load management plan, which is comes around every 3 years, I think. And then the integrated resources plan, which comes around every 2 years. So anyway, every 4 years they write this one that kind of pulls together all of that stuff. And this year there's a bigger emphasis on environmental, on energy justice than ever before. But we need to keep an eye on that. And so that's something I'll be doing. There's comments due tomorrow on process issues. If you're interested in that, reach out to me and I'll give you the link. But I know it's kind of, it's not a lot of time to make comments, but there'll be plenty of other opportunities to comment on the plan as it's moving through the public process.
Great. Thank you. This, the beginning part is a little bit in the weeds for most of us, but when it gets to be something we can actually grasp, we'll be happy that we can do that. So anybody have anything else? Thank you, Kathy. Okay. Well, since we don't have anything else, we will look forward to seeing everybody tomorrow evening. You have to submit written testimony by 2 p.m. to the city, to CSEP. And if you want to attend the meeting, the room opens at 5:45 and you have to register to attend the meeting. You can, it only takes a minute, and you also have to sign up to testify. So I'm going to submit a list of people who want to testify from the Environmental Advisory Council, and anybody, any of the rest of you who want, I can submit your names as well in my list. Thank you. Steve put the link, again, the Zoom link to register for the hearing. So, but that link is not going to be active until 5:45 tomorrow. It's not, you can't go on it now and use it, unfortunately. But if anybody needs the information, let me know. Kathy, are you going to testify? You can, you're muted.
I'm probably not the best one to testify on that, because I haven't been active in that committee and I don't know the details very well. I just wanted to draw people's attention to something that Aaron put in the chat that I forgot to mention, which is this shared solar bill. I'll be keeping an eye on that for everybody too. The problem with that is some of the issues with these shared solar facilities is sometimes it's moved to be doing like big utility scale stuff. And we really want to push for it to have an emphasis on community shared solar, as we've been supporting that all along.
Yes.
But that's the link for tomorrow's public hearing and written comments. Written comments can still go in.
Thank you. Okay. And I see Aaron also put something in about an important food waste reduction and food recovery bill that is in the general law committee. And this is like playing whack-a-mole. But anyway, thank you, Aaron. Please keep us posted if it comes time for the whole CGA to vote on it. The Environmental Advisory Council will be delighted to write a letter in support of it and in support of the shared solar bill. So just let me know, because I can't watch all these bills. So thank you. I'm watching the pesticide bills anyway. And Thank you, everybody. Thank you for being here. See you tomorrow. There is one other item on the agenda before the leaf blower hearing. I don't know how long it will take, so don't sue me if we don't start at 6 p.m. promptly. Thank you, Dawn, for doing logistics. Thank you, Madeline, for putting all the links in the chat. Thank you, everybody else, for all of your good information, advice, counsel, et cetera. And we will see you very soon. Okay? Great.
Dawn? Yeah. Dawn?
Yeah.
Can I get a copy of the recording or end on the minute?
Yes, I will have it posted online. It's very large when I try to send it, but okay. Yeah, I will post it and send you the link.
Okay.